The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 8 minutes after 7, a chilly 26. Man, where is it? How is it in Grants Pass where you are, Matt? Welcome to the show.
Well, my dog just came downstairs and had to use the restroom, which is the front yard, of course. And everything is frozen solid out there.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, it's cold. The horses are out in the pasture, but they've got these big, heavy, thick blankets. So, but anyway.
I was going to ask you, since you had called for other things here, I at least want to pick your brain on something since you are a stock guy. And yeah. How is the market reacting? There's a lot to digest this morning, isn't there, the new Trump administration?
I think, first off, one of the main rules of investing is the market anticipates and then retail investors react. So You saw that big rally into Inauguration Day.
Yes.
So that was something to take advantage of. What I've noticed this morning, even though all the tech bros, were having a long party day with Trump yesterday, the Dow is actually up 0.75%, while the NASDAQ is up only 0.06%.
Really?
Yeah, that's interesting. Semiconductors, the SOX index, they call it, is up 0.4%. S&P is up 0.45%. And then the transportation index, a lot of people ignore. Most financial channels don't discuss it. I like it. I think it's a bellwether for economics generally. And just today, it's just a today thing. It's up 0.75%. And it didn't have a big rally like the NASDAQ did into inauguration, but last week it had a good week, and then moving up again today.
I think what that is, not that I'm any expert, but I'm talking to you about this. You and I have talked about this enough. I think what that is saying is that there is this feeling that the nuts and bolts of a real economy and not a vapor economy. I think what they were trying to do under Biden was like the vapor economy. We're going to push you to electric vehicles that nobody wants, and we're going to take away your gas stove, even though you need that, or your gas water heater. We're going to take care of everything, and we're going to replace you with AI. You know, I guess I'm being a little funny with that, but still,
no,
I'm wondering if, though, in the Trump administration, people know that real things are going to be made and or done and or transported, needing real transportation networks.
I believe this for the, 34 years I've been doing this.
Yeah.
And that is that if the real economy is working, right, the nuts and the bolts and making things and shipping things, if that's working, the stock market takes care of itself. Investors will find those pockets of strength and move on to those pockets. The other thing I found is that the industrials, they didn't have a big move. Basically, the transportation index has been trading under, let's call it 17,000 since October of 21.
Mm-hmm.
So it really hasn't moved up much. It's traded in a range from 12,000 to 18,000, and that's about it. So usually get these higher levels of consolidation. When they break the new highs, they tend to predict more new highs. So I don't have anything in particular in transportation that I'm interested in like today, but that's something I want to consider. I have noticed that shipping companies got weak it's been for like the last couple of months,
mm-hmm.
and they were doing really well before that. But I've noticed that they've bounced, and those are beginning to move higher. When I say shipping, I mean actual boats on the ocean.
Yeah, no, I get that. All right. Hey, is there anything else you wanted to add here that you were also calling about? Go ahead.
Well, I did. I mean, God, that was a fantastic interview. I've always told you, and, I can compliment you without sounding terrible, but
okay.
You do great interviews. Like I said, I'm sitting here listening, and just when I'm thinking of asking a question or I want a question to ask, you ask it. So here's what I'll say about the federal agencies, the bureaucracies versus the state. Part of the reason that neither party wants to get rid of them, they talk about it, not the left, but the Republicans talk about it. But when you get in, like Trump signing those executive orders yesterday, I think part of that was, a big part of that was to send a message. Part of it is, of course, you know, he wants to let everybody know he's serious. But how do you get rid of the Department of Education when part of your agenda is to get rid of DEI, the, you know, 49 genders and all that stuff?
So you actually want to steer the agenda in your direction instead. That's the whole goal, right?
Well, how do you do it in blue states if you get rid of the Department of Education?
Point well taken. Well, it's the grant stream funding. That's the carrot and the stick, the carrot and the cudgel to beat the states into submission. Good point on that, Matt. Thanks for making it, okay? Appreciate it. That's 770-5633. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, good morning, Bill. It's Deplorable Patrick. Good morning, good morning.
Hello, DP.
Yeah, I was at the inauguration watching party the other day. Got to say hi to Linda. And she joined us toward the last. And anyway, I enjoyed the whole program this morning. My question is, are you encouraged overall?
Yes.
Do you think that there's enough backbone to go for making English the official language of the United States of America?
No, I don't. I don't think there is that kind of backbone.
That's pathetic.
Well, I'm sorry. You just asked me if I thought there was enough backbone, but
that's pathetic among the so-called leaders. Is not pathetic among, with you. I mean,
yeah, but you know, let me put it this way. I would love to be proven wrong. How about that, DP? All right.
I love that. Let's put that on the record.
All right. Thanks for the call. Got to roll. Okay. We'll have the Hannity update and more coming up, and then. Piano maestro, I mean, just a local treasure, Alexander Tutinov. He has a series of concerts coming up, and I think he is just so well worth getting to know more about. I've always wanted to talk with him, and I get my first shot next.
As a business owner, you like...
News Talk 106.3 KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, he makes it look so easy. And sound so easily, but it makes it sound so easy, I should say. But this takes decades of practice and just dedication. And, of course, I'm speaking about piano virtuoso Alexander Tutinov, of course, professor in residence. Is that your title over at SOU?
That's what they call me.
Okay. Wonderful.
Good morning.
Wonderful. And you have a series of concerts, the Tutinov Piano Series, and you have another one coming up on February 14th. I wanted to make sure that people know about, because I have watched you in concert several times. And at every time, like I mentioned to you off air, I'm a hack pianist. I just taught myself to play in high school, and I just do it by ear, you know, that kind of thing. And I look at what you do, and I just like, oh. You know, and I melt, and I'm sorry to sound like a slobbering fanboy, okay? But I am, okay?
My goodness. Wow. Maybe I shouldn't say anything. I should go away because you give me such a build-up. But you, obviously, it's a great honor to be here on air right here in this beautiful studio. And I'm honored, and I also want to say that people who come to me after the concerts to talk to me, often they say, you know, I'm a hack pianist myself. Those are the most dangerous because they actually know what's good and what's not good. So you got me here. So I'm very, very pleased that you are a colleague.
Yeah. If you don't mind. Pianist. Yeah. Thank you very much. If you don't mind me asking, tell us about this February 14th. I want to make sure that this is helpful for you, too, that people know what's coming up. Because national treasure, local treasure here, and we want to make sure that you're heard.
Thank you. And I will use every opportunity. This is a Valentine's Day concert, and I wouldn't be able to do it alone. So I recruited a wonderful, good friend of mine for years who happens to be another celebrity in the Valley. Actually, he's a medical doctor who started out as a classical pianist and has a degree, Dr. Brian Hall, local anesthesiologist. And he and I are going to be doing dueling pianos all night long on Friday, February 14th, starting at 7:30, and the beautiful music recital hall.
In Southern Oregon University, yes. All right. At what pieces will you be dueling on, do you recall?
Well, we wanted to make it, a little bit sweeter and lighter fare, but also romantic. There'll be some surprises, we're hoping, for every audience member, but we will start off with a couple of Russian composers, because, they know a little romance there.
Of course.
Rachmaninoff and Arensky, can't go wrong with those two. And then after intermission, we do a few dances. We do a tango by American composer Samuel Barber. And then we move to French music, and it's just beautiful. Two works by Francis Poulenc. And we'll end the evening, if people choose to stay, with the three American ragtimes. But they're themed as the Garden of Eden. So they are kind of a ragtime take on the eternal feminine and the good old Adam, and then Serpent's Kiss. So, but again, it's not really offensive. It's a very cool little laid-back ragtime.
All right, very good. And by the way, this is going to be, once again, Valentine's Day, 7:30, SOU, Music Recital Hall. And it's $35 for the reserve seating, $30 for seniors. And I will post at, on KMED.com how you can get these, but it's SOU.universitytickets.com. Well worth it. And what I found interesting is that now SOU offers a live stream. So for your entire household, if you couldn't make the show in person, you can actually just stream it for $35 for the entire household. You can invite your friends over and then watch the concert that way. But I think it's better in person, just telling you.
I would tend to agree. There's nothing like a live performance, but yeah, this is an added convenience. And of course, we're hoping to sell out the house. So for those who are late in the game, they can still catch it on their screens, computer screens in this case, unless they want to broadcast it on their television and sit in front of it on the couch.
All right.
So it's very fancy, and I think it's very high quality.
Professor, I wanted to just talk a little bit about your, like I said, I've just known that you were just fabulous, and not to be the slobbering fanboy that I am. It's kind of embarrassing, I know, but I just have to go there. When did you discover your love for the piano? Was it something that came naturally, or was it like so many people that learn to play piano at first, parents forced them into this? You are going to learn to play the piano. How did this work back in Soviet Russia?
Exactly. You just nailed it in the head. Soviet Russia. That's where I grew up. Well, Belarus, but
Belarus,
it was Soviet Union because I'm old enough to remember that. Actually, I don't remember this, but my family keeps telling me that I just came up to the piano and started playing because I watched my aunt practice at our house, little upright, and then she went to wash up her hands because my grandma called everybody for dinner, and she only calls once. Mm-hmm. And then she went to wash her hands, but I was watching her, and I came to the piano. I stood there, and I repeated what she played. So then they felt it was maybe time for lessons. So they brought me to a teacher in my hometown, and the teacher said it's a little too early. But she started me out with Walton and Martin and just playing for me, just getting the rhythm in. Mm-hmm. And then,
how old were you at this time?
About 3.5, 4. And then at 5, she started already serious lessons with me. And by the age 6.5, she said, why don't you go to Moscow and try in the conservatory? There was a special boarding school for especially gifted children. And the year I was accepted, number three out of 200 applicants.
Wow.
The school changed the name. It was just a Central Music School. It was no longer for specially gifted children, I guess. Uh-huh. That was the first message in humility here.
I suppose so. And what era was this?
Brezhnev still was in power. In fact, I've given flowers to him once, and I think when I was 7, I sat on his lap because I was really a small kid, and they just looked for somebody that doesn't weigh a whole lot, And our school was about 200 yards from Kremlin, because, well, downtown Moscow. And so when they would block off the streets for the dignitaries' visits, we were inside that area. And then when some photo reporter would just say, we need kids for the picture, so they would cancel our class and just haul some kids into Kremlin.
And tag, you're it, right?
Yep.
Because yeah, you were small enough.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad to know you didn't weigh Brezhnev down. Do you recall much about that? Because I know that Brezhnev was not well through much of his reign in
even
those days.
Even at my tender age of 7 and 8, I could notice some some things that were a little bit wrong and off.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, when it comes to attaining your level of mastery, and I know everyone's different, but how many hours of practice back in those days is contrasted with maybe how many hours of practice now? Because, you know, it doesn't just happen. You had these amazing natural abilities that people were able to recognize, but what does it take to develop that?
If there is a little time for a segue, you mentioned me on your program. I was driving. That was a few months back, and I'm listening to your show, and I think you talk about minimal wage or something, and then you're like, take somebody's level of ability. Of Alexander said, no, I just about drove off the road. I was surprised and, of course, pleased. My ego was fed for weeks after that. I was mentioned on the air, you know, musicians, artists, we live for those moments, you know. But so back to your question, I don't think I was forced to practice, but yeah, the number 4 hours comes to mind, which was pretty much required as a part of our workday.
4 hours a day.
But then after 6 p.m., after dinner in our boarding school, there was 2 hours to spend however you want. And so often the kids would just go back and woodshed a little more you know, at the piano. So 4 to 6.
4 to 6 hours every day.
Every day.
In and out.
But because it was a boarding school and everybody did it, I thought that was normal. So I didn't think I was a freak.
What, in retrospect, did you think that?
Do I want this for my kids? I don't know, but again, the system was different, and I'm very, very grateful that everything was paid for. I'm very grateful that I went this path, and I'm very grateful that I received this kind of training early on, because the rest was easy. I always felt natural at the piano, and, you know, having a series of concerts, which, by the way, we still have 4 more this season before May. It's named after me, and I'm still alive. You know, this kind of recognition is pretty special.
Well, to be recognized while you're actually alive is a good thing. How many classical composers were not appreciated until after they died, as
most
an example?
Of them, majority.
Yeah,
majority.
Indeed. Were you ever under the old Soviet system in those days? Was it one of those things where you were kind of forced to do what you did because it was about projecting state power at that time, you know, through the arts?
We were fortunate enough. Actually, our school was one of probably 2 or 3 that reported to the Ministry of Culture rather than Ministry of Education. So the curriculum was more free. We were open to philosophy and studying literature early on. Foreign language was taught from second grade on. So we were blessed in this regard. But again, I remember there were times when if I tell a joke, I have to really watch out and see who's in the room, because you could get in trouble for that. Were we forced to do? I mean, I never got in trouble, but I had plenty of opportunity. As far as being told what to do. Yeah, this was pretty natural, I would say. The Soviet Union fell apart when I was 20. I did my 2 years mandatory compulsory service in the Soviet Army. Mm-hmm. I even made a sergeant. I take a small credit in its demise because I was not a good soldier, to tell you the truth. But
not,
yeah.
Not your skill set, in other words.
No, not really.
Okay. By the way, I'm speaking with Professor Alexander Tudinov of Southern Oregon University. Of course, artist in residence. And gosh, we're just pleased as punch to have him in here. And out of curiosity, what does a piano master as yourself, and once again, not to blow smoke, what do you listen to for fun? I mean, do you get to the point where you've heard so many piano pieces that you go do something different, or are you still immersed in that even in your off time?
Yes and no. I love all sorts of music. My playlist is pretty long. I listen to jazz, of course, mm-hmm. and some good old rock and things like that. But due to my profession right now, I'm often asked to evaluate, adjudicate various competitions, and sometimes I'm in the preliminary screening committee. So often it's not what I would rather listen to, but professionally speaking, I have to listen to a lot of classical music. My colleagues, I have been for about 12 years one of the voting members for the Grammy committee.
Oh.
And it started out as boxes of CDs being shipped to my house. Right now they all moved to iTunes and things like that, platforms. I just get like a secret channel. And so often my days are spent listening to classical music. I don't mind it.
Oh, you don't mind it? Okay. No. So it's something that you're quite comfortable with. What is your favorite piano to play, though, out of all the ones that you have played over the years? And I was even reading that a Bösendorfer had burned down in the L.A. fires that, in Bob Clearmountain's studios, the recording studios down there. And I know that it was considered legendary, but of all the pianos you've played, can you think of any?
My goodness. This is a heartbreak. And of course, every time I hear about the piano being hurt, to me, it's almost like a live person, which mm-hmm. also is quite heartbreaking. The pianos, out of just being superstitious, if I name one, the others might get mad at me and will not cooperate in the concert. But I own a
That's very funny. I've never heard that. So you don't want to jinx the future shows. That's great.
But I've played Oscar Peterson's piano. I've played Victor Borge's piano. I mean, over the course of the years, different brands, but I was fortunate enough to have acquired a Steinway piano at my home with the real ivories. It's just really a classy, awesome instrument.
Besides, it's a Steinway, crying out loud.
Can't go wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in the since you say you judge a lot in the Grammys and such, what would you say is the state of music culture in the United States? I've been concerned for a long time that there doesn't seem to be as many people wanting to go into it, and I think this is a real problem. And I think this is something where I think the Soviet Union back in the day, of course, made sure that we were going to continue to celebrate the culture and things which are, beautiful and music, of course, being a big part of that. How would you evaluate the United States right now in that?
The United States, as the world in general, I think, well, our art, I think, is a niche art anyways. So I would say maybe 1-2% of people listen to classical music. It's been proven that, it does good for your brain and your heart and soul. And we've seen many opportunities, for proving that. But I have not lost my hope. Even people who got musical training and then ended up not going to music, they will come back to music. And my duo partner for the Valentine's Day show is a good
proof. He's an example of that. He was classically trained, then became an anesthesiologist, right,
Dr. Hall. And yet he is a fabulous pianist. And amongst my private students, I see, you know, doctors and lawyers and all sorts of computer scientists. They almost need piano to balance off their daily projects to keep sanity, because it's an incredible, very taxing occupations that they're in. And I know a psychotherapist that has three offices in Alaska in all three major cities, and each of them has a piano. And he schedules, he builds in time to go between his sessions and patients and just unwind in the piano. So music will always have the place, and classical music in particular, in the world. It was never a mass art, but I feel that people who love it, I think, are just a little more special.
I like that. Professor, one final question here. What are you are still with us, and thank goodness, and you're not an old man, you know, at this point.
Thank you. I'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take this. How would you like to be remembered? Because you strike me as so humble, which I think is probably a healthy way to be, you know, these days. How would you like to be remembered, like, you know, 100 years from now when they're going back through you know, the archives, or a couple of hundred years ago, back when mechanical pianos existed, you know, that right. I can almost hear them saying that.
I hope they don't remember me from a police blog or anything like that. You know, people think of a legacy, and I think I just prefer to work and contribute the best I can in every area. At this point, I think I'm blessed to be a decent teacher and adjudicator. So there are many ways to share and leave a legacy. But I never think in these terms. I just get up and go to work and hope that somebody's life improves with my contribution. And if there is some music, they will say, yeah, there was this guy in Oregon.
This guy in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, some guy in Oregon, sure.
I like to be remembered as somebody who spent quarter a century in the Rogue Valley, and this is how long I've been here. I consider this home, and I love it, and I see that the interest for music is alive and well. You're absolutely right. It's not as practical as many other areas, but it's just as necessary as anything, or even more.
Well, it speaks to the soul, too.
For sure.
The soul and the spirit. The Tutenoff Piano Series presents, of course, Professor Alexander Tutenoff and Dr. Brian Hall. Special Valentine's Day concert. It's going to be Friday, February 14th at 7:30 p.m. SOU Music Recital Hall. And I hope that you find time and check out this show and any other parts of the Tutenoff Piano Series. Anything else you wanted to add here? Before we take off, Professor?
We have already the whole new next season, 25-26, planned. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been revealed. And sorry, I'm not going to do it on the air today, also because we're out of time. But there are still four concerts to catch, one in each month of February, March, April, and May. And you could either go to it's oca.sou.edu, and OCA is for Oregon Center for the Arts, Southern Oregon University, .edu for education. And there's lots of information.
Professor, it's been an honor. Thank you very much.
The honor is all mine.
20 before 8 on KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
As the Montana roofing crews travel around Southern Oregon, they like to keep things interesting.
Place inside out. Visit MilletConstruction.com. By the way, stray cats may look and sound like they're from the UK, but they're actually from Long Island, New York.
Hi, I'm Deb with Father and Son Jewelry, and I'm on KMED.
Quarter before 8. Former Josephine County Commissioner, of course, State ORP Chair Herman Bertschinger. Herman, always great having you back on. Well, it was a great day yesterday, wasn't it? What do you think?
Right. Remember, that was former ORP chair.
ORP chair. Oh, thank you.
And my title bounces back to senator because you get to keep that for the rest of your life.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I'm going to say I can always call you Senator Bertschinger, and I'm right, right?
Yep. Yep. Oh. And on official documents, I put Oregon State Senator 2013 to 2020.
Okay.
So that's how I do that.
You know, as pleased as I was to see what happened in the nation's capital, I wish that I was happier about the chances of the current state senators and the state reps. Do you agree? Looking forward here?
Well, this whole thing with Trump, now, you know, these blue states say they're going to fight back against Trump. Well, this is going to be interesting. I think where Kotek, the first thing Kotek and Trump are going to lock horns are over sanctuary state.
Sure.
I think that's the first thing. And the second thing is vote by mail. I think that. And so Trump's going to control the purse string. And even though Kotek has made multiple statements that she wants to collaborate with Donald Trump, I don't think that that's going to be the case.
However, with Donald Trump controlling the administrative state, or at least attempting, doing his best to control, I don't know if any one president can truly completely control it, but you know, he certainly knows that he has to work this. That might get Oregon officials to sit up and take notice. And you can talk about, we're going to resist, we're going to resist, we're going to resist, but isn't there about one-third of the budget or more that actually comes from the federal government? I'm not happy about that, but that's reality.
Yeah, it is. It's a third, and a third. But Oregon, California is in a better position because they got 40 million people, and mm-hmm. Washington's in a better position because they got, 20 million people. Oregon's got 4.1. We've got about 1.2% of the population of the United States. So we're not in such a good position.
Yeah, we're kind of an afterthought to Washington, D.C. Yeah. for the most part. But the one thing that's different, though, is that this state has been used as the petri dish. I think we've talked about this off and on over the years.
Because we're such a small state, so it doesn't take a lot of money to manipulate things and to push issues and stuff mm-hmm. because we're such a small state.
Which is why all the stupid ballot measures come in with, finance without a town money, right?
Right. Mm. You know, and so the whole sanctuary thing is going to be interesting because that actually goes back to the 80s. When Oregon just really started taking off in a left direction.
What drove that push for the sanctuary state? Did you ever look into the history of that? You weren't in the state legislature or the Senate at that time.
No. That was way before my time. It was initiated at first that law enforcement couldn't participate in enforcing federal laws associated with immigration. And I think it came out of a lot of that came out of the agriculture industry that were using labor. And some of that's still true today. The labor for a lot of the agriculture industry happens to be in that space, and they would like to keep those workers. But I don't know how that's going to work out. I think the petri dish idea that I have brought along is going to work in the opposite this time because
really,
Oregon's going to be easier for the federal government to execute these types of policies because we are only 1.2% of the population. So
that's a very interesting point. I hadn't thought about it because the ease of which it is influenced to go hard left. I mean, not saying that it's going to be a conservative state by the time Trump is done with it. There's no way. Demographics don't match that, you know, here in the state of Oregon. But as far as getting certain things done, the money matters, doesn't it, ultimately?
Yes, it does. And how is Tina, I shouldn't call her Tina. That's just, how is Governor Kotek going to react to that? She can't use the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
she can't use the National Guard to, let's say, stop border enforcement from coming in here and having their way in certain ways, right? All they can do is just tell local law enforcement, no, you can't help or get involved. I guess that's what the main point of this is.
The federal government controls the National Guard. They control the purse string.
Mm-hmm.
Every cent of it. So And then you've got 36 counties, and only about four of them, maybe five of the 36, would actually legitimately support. I think the others would support the federal policy.
So you're thinking that we may see some county sheriffs in the vast majority of Oregon counties, then? You think the vast majority of law enforcement is actually in favor of what the Trump administration is trying to do?
Well, even if the sheriff himself or herself, that person, isn't, those counties are very red, and the sheriff position is an elected position. So, you know, that's how it works in our republic. And so the sheriff is going to have to do what the people want them to do, or the sheriff's not going to get elected again.
And would you then see perhaps help for the immigration enforcement coming in through the back door, perhaps, and being very quiet about it?
I don't think it'll be quiet.
Really?
No, I think we're going to be the petri dish. It's going to be the opposite.
Oh, and so maybe it's going to be one of those things where it's almost like the Trump administration dares the Kotek administration to go after officials, local officials, and law enforcement helping out the feds. Is that kind of where you're going?
Something like the modern day march through Georgia, you know?
Uh huh.
So, that's what I think is going to happen.
Because
it's not going to cost that much money. You're not going to have all these federal agents, because we're a small community. We're a small state. So this is going to be kind of interesting. I mean, I think things through the political eye. And I wouldn't say I'm always right, but I'm usually pretty close, you know. And if you think about it, to unsanctionize. Is that a good word?
I don't know if it's a good word. You've just invented it then. How about that, Herman?
Yeah, maybe it's desanctionized.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon, it's going to be much simpler to desanctionize Oregon than it would be to desanctionize California. Would you not agree?
Yes, I would. So yeah. You could see that. I could see then your point then that the Petri dish works in reverse too. We can be manipulated one way or the other, depending on where the pressure is put.
And look, you know, I watched Trump's speech. I was very happy with most of, if you ever noticed, most of the stuff in his speech was kind of what we would call old time common sense.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Yes, I do. I think that's also why he, of course, enrages people. I had a listener that wrote me about an MLK celebration down in Ashland, in which they were practically just spitting his name out. You know, in the MLK Day, you know, down there in Ashland. Amazing.
Well, how many times did he say so-and-so country or whatever needs us more than we need them?
Lots. Many times. Yes. I have to say about 5 to 10 times, if I recall, yesterday.
And with 33% of our budget is made up of federal funds, wouldn't you say, couldn't he say the same thing about Oregon?
Mm-hmm. Oregon needs him more than... more than he needs us, I guess.
Right? So this is going to be very... And the Democrats, you know, they had their big meeting. So they had the governor, the secretary of state, the treasurer, the attorney general, and the speaker of the House and the Senate president all meet. Now, I think to the pleasure of the Democrat base that this legislative session... they're going to pass some more wacky liberal stuff to appease their base in light of Trump being president. That's my prediction for this legislative session.
That also means that it's about punishing people like me and you, right?
Yep. But in the long run, you know, these machines take a long time. This is going to be fascinating. I'm glad I'm out of office. I'm glad I'm on the sidelines and I'm watching now. But this is going to be very interesting.
You know something, Herman, about the only power that Republicans have right now is to walk out. And yet they say if they walk out, they can't you know, well, we won't be returned to office. But on the other hand, if it's the only card that you have to play, what's the point of you being there? And really, the key is just to make sure that there are outages if they walk out to stop something really bad. It becomes excused. And that's something Canope didn't do last time when there was the walkout. He didn't, bargain for that. And hence, we lost all those conservative senators. Are there smart enough people in the Senate and the House that might be willing to actually use that power this time in spite of the Measure 113 restrictions?
I think I'd put my money on the don't pass line on this one. In other words, I don't think that that's going to happen.
You don't, huh?
No, I do not think that's going to happen. I would be surprised. I could be wrong, mm-hmm. but I just don't see it happening.
What does that say about state Republicans? You know, in the legislature, why do they feel that way? Why is it more important to stay in office if you're not actually able to accomplish anything while in office?
I think that's a good question for the constituents to ask their elected official. Perfect. My deepest concern, though, is that it doesn't put citizens against citizens in a very, very tenacious space. When you study history, I've just been spending a lot of time studying the Boer Wars and how united everybody was. But then after the Boer Wars, how divided the Boers were. There was two factions, and it was very, very contentious, and to a certain point, violent. You know, very violent. And you know, you just seen that. I don't know if you read that the elections office in Multnomah County was attacked by a large group of people with masks on and broke windows and doors and stuff. So I, you know, that's what I hope does not happen. But when you get into these situations where you have the Trump administration versus the Kotek administration, that I worry that these uprisings are going to occur, and that's a big concern for me.
That's interesting too, but given that the Trump administration against the Kotek administration ends up having the island of misfit humans, the Antifa types, you know, lashing out against their own cities. Isn't that funny? You think about that?
I think if Tina doesn't, Governor Kotek, I'm sorry, I've called her Tina my whole career because we were on that type of relationship, but she's governor. So Governor Kotek, I hope she considers all of these things that you and I have been talking about and plays their cards correctly, you know, so that we don't wind up in a very contentious state.
I would say invest in popcorn to be chewing on to watch this game, all right?
I do have a lot of popcorn, and I follow a lot of different stuff. And so we'll continue to have our radio shows and try to highlight things. I mean, if you look what's going on in Josephine County, this is just a microcosm, you know, it's just a small, but you have a small group of people that are very loud. You know, they just recalled Commissioner West.
Yeah, and very angry, by the way. Very angry, yeah. Very loud.
Very angry, very loud. But I think it's going to bite them because I think the statements they made, I think I have to agree with Commissioner West, were false. And so this is going to work its way through the courts. And we'll see how that goes. You know, if he prevails in this lawsuit, that will change quickly. You know, when there's monetary penalties for lying, I think that will slow down a bit. But we will see how all this is all very interesting stuff, Bill. This is stuff that doesn't happen all the time. You know what I mean?
Yes.
This is all new. We're plowing new ground. And, you know, I looked at, you know, so we have an individual who changed their party affiliation to Republican, standing side by side with the chairman of the Democrat Party here in Josephine County on a protest of the courthouse. And you scratch your head. And that's like I said, I've been studying the Boer Wars in South Africa. fascinating history and politics, and I'm starting to see some similarities, you know? And human behavior does not change. Human behavior is human behavior.
But also, you have now to be, but also, honestly, then, you're witnessing some subversion going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So, all things are happening. Things are, you know, traditionally, this country's been, you know, Democrat, Republican. It has for a long time since Abraham Lincoln initiated the Republic Party, you know, got rid of the Whig. So, and there's some similarities there. Look how the Republicans spun out of the Whig Party. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're basically a two-party system, and anybody that disagrees with me with that, well, I guess they could disagree with. But now it's starting to change. The tactics are changing. On this political scene, they're changing a little bit. So, you know, they're no longer becoming static. They are changing.
Yeah, the one thing that that I still can't handle is when I hear Republicans talking about how important it is to reach across the aisle. Does it work right now, Herman? Honestly.
You know, there was, like I said, and traditionally, you know, you go back to Reagan and, who was the speaker there, the Irishman?
Tip O'Neill.
Tip O'Neill. You know, that was a different era. It was a different era when I started in the Senate. You know, when I started in the Senate, you could actually reach across the aisle and not get your hand bitten off. But that's how it is now. There's no compromise anymore. They don't have to. They tell you that. They say that.
And so it just escapes me why you would wish to be cooperative with people who don't wish to be cooperative with you, and all intents and purposes would just as soon you be dead or gone. All right. Or defenestrated.
Yeah.
No, I think the word is defenestrated would be a good one. You know, just as soon throw you out a window.
and I watched that evolve. It didn't happen overnight, but it evolved. And it evolved for two reasons. One, numbers.
Mm-hmm.
How many elected Democrats versus Republicans? That was one of the factors. And two, who those people were. Okay. So now you have people in there that are very, very progressive.
No more Peter Courtney's exist there, as far as I can tell, or very few, if any.
Yeah. Peter was really good at mitigating that until the end, and they just ran him over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the Republicans that kept him in office. You know, last couple of years I was there, it was the Republicans. In fact, the last time he was up for election, I voted no for him to be president. I think I was the only Republican voted no. And he said, Herman, why in the hell did you vote no? And I says, because I feel sorry for you. I says, you need to go home and enjoy your family, because they're going to ravage you, Peter.
All right. Well, you were right about that. They sure did. Hey, Herman,
yeah.
Senator, I'll tell you what, we'll break and catch you next week. And so far, I'm feeling guardedly optimistic. I will continue to be guardedly optimistic, but also on guard on what's happening in the state of Oregon. I think that's the only way we can be right now.
Well, what I think everybody ought to do, you know, I don't know if you played baseball, but the old score books, you know,
mm-hmm.
who hit his and who, you know, you keep score of all the players and what they've done and everything. Everybody needs to get one of those now. And keep score.
Make little notes, okay?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. All right. We'll
thanks.
See.
Thanks, Senator. We'll see you next week, okay? Be well.
All right. Bye-bye.
Former State Senator Herman Bearchigger. It's 4 minutes after 8. KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. KPXG Grants Pass. And I know next week we're going to be digging back more into the fire map, because that fire map situation is still got a lot of people hot and bothered about it, okay? More on that.
Hi, this is Cassie from...